Welcome to this deep dive. In this lesson, we're exploring Lesson 3.2, Identifying Patterns, Trends, and Insights. If you've watched the overview, this will build on that. If not, you'll still be able to follow along. Now let's go further by exploring practical examples, future workplace relevance, responsible use, and how you can build confidence with this skill.
I'm really excited for this one, actually.
Yeah, me too. Because, I mean, imagine realizing that there's this invisible pattern in your daily routine that is secretly sabotaging your career.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And all you had to do to fix it was just, you know, connect two dots. So today, we're making those invisible data patterns visible for you.
Exactly. And, you know, that invisible sabotage, it happens far more often than people think.
Right.
We're just constantly generating and interacting with this overwhelming amount of information every single day. But without the right lens, it is just noise.
Just totally meaningless noise. And I think when people hear a phrase like data analysis, they instantly picture someone in a dark room.
Staring at a glowing screen.
Right. Staring at endless rows of numbers on a spreadsheet trying to decipher the matrix or something.
Yeah, which sounds terrible.
It really does. Yeah. But we all actually know what a trend is, right? It's just a metric shifting over time. The friction, the hard part, usually happens at the intersection of comparison and insight.
Yeah.
Anyone can see a graph going up, but how do you extract the actual why?
Well, what's fascinating here is the sheer cost of ignoring the skill.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not just some abstract academic exercise. Without pattern recognition skills, you risk overlooking really critical signals.
Oh, absolutely.
You misunderstand the shifts happening in your industry, which, I mean, that leads directly to flawed, weak decisions.
Right, you're just flying blind.
Exactly. You end up constantly reacting to problems after they happen instead of, you know, anticipating them before they even arrive.
Okay, let's unpack this, because finding a trend is easy. But actually, avoiding the pitfall of bad data means we have to master three foundational elements: trends, comparisons, and insights. And I think the best way to understand how these three interact is to think about a real-world scenario.
Okay, I like that.
So imagine you live near a river. A trend is basically just noticing that the river's water level is rising over the week.
Okay, simple observation.
Right. A comparison is looking around and seeing that, hey, the neighboring river a few miles away isn't rising at all.
Interesting. So you have a point of reference now.
Exactly. But the insight, the really crucial part, is realizing why it's rising. Maybe there's a dam release upstream. And knowing that means you need to get out there and build a sandbag wall right now.
That's a great way to look at it.
Thanks. But it makes me wonder, is the insight always the hardest part to find?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. The insight is definitely the hardest part.
Because it takes actual thought.
Right. Because an insight requires a cognitive leap. Identifying a trend or making a comparison, that is essentially just an observation.
You're just pointing at the thing.
Exactly. You're simply stating a fact about what is right in front of you. The water is high here. The water is low there.
Yeah, yeah.
But an insight elevates that mere observation into actual forecasting and problem solving. It's the critical bridge that connects raw data to real-world action.
You have to actually care about what the data means.
You do. It requires you to synthesize the information, apply external context, and, you know, relentlessly ask, so what?
Right, so what? So I have to ask, if the insight is the hardest part, how do we actually force that cognitive leap?
Well,
because, I mean, the data isn't going to just jump up and hand us the answer.
It definitely will not. You need actionable, really deliberate strategies to extract meaning.
Okay, like what?
So the first strategy is to actively compare changes over time. You don't just look at a single snapshot. You look at the entire sequence. Is a specific metric accelerating, decelerating, or just plateauing over days, months, or years?
Sure. Time series analysis. I think we've all seen a line chart at some point.
Exactly.
But what about the second strategy?
The second is looking for relationships between variables.
Okay.
Does one thing reliably happen when another thing happens? Like if metric A goes up, does metric B always go down?
Let me stop you there because I want to push back on that a little bit.
Sure.
Everyone always says, you know, correlation does not equal causation.
Oh, the golden rule of statistics.
Right. So if I see two lines moving together on a graph, couldn't it just be a total coincidence?
It could.
How is finding a relationship an actual strategy if it might just be a random fluke?
That is exactly why you need the insight phase. You are entirely correct to question that. The classic example in statistics is that ice cream sales and shark attacks both spike at the exact same time of year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, they are highly correlated on a graph. So if you start at the comparison phase, your big insight might be that eating ice cream actually attracts sharks.
Which would be a terrible business model for an ice cream stand on the beach.
Terrible. You'd be out of business in a week. But the true insight requires applying context to find the lurking variable. And in this case, the variable is summer heat.
Of course.
When it's hot, more people buy ice cream and more people swim in the ocean, which obviously exposes more people to sharks.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
So the strategy of finding relationships isn't about blindly assuming one thing causes the other.
No, not at all. It's about using the correlation as a compass. It just points you toward where the deeper investigation actually needs to happen.
I like that. The relationship is just the smoke, but you still have to go find the fire.
Perfectly said.
So what's the third strategy?
The third strategy, and this is often where the most paradigm-shifting discoveries happen, by the way, is hunting for unusual patterns or outliers.
Outliers, okay.
Yeah, what breaks the trend. If everything has been steadily increasing for a year, but there is one massive, inexplicable drop on a random Thursday.
Yeah.
You have to ask, why did that happen?
Wait, if an outlier is just a random, unusual spike, isn't it usually just a fluke? Why shouldn't I just ignore the random data point and stick to the main trend? I mean, if 99 days out of 100 behave normally, I'd rather just focus on the 99.
You might be tempted to do that, but ignoring outliers is incredibly dangerous.
Really?
Yes. Outliers demand explanation because they represent either your biggest hidden risk or your biggest untapped opportunity.
Oh, interesting.
Think about a business context. A random spike in user churn on a Thursday might look like a glitch on a spreadsheet.
Just a data error.
Right. But if you investigate, you might realize a recent software update is actually crashing your app for a specific subset of users.
Oh, wow. So if you ignored it, you'd be bleeding users without knowing why.
Exactly. Outliers are anomalies, and anomalies are where the deepest insights hide.
I love that. And bringing this into the modern workflow, I mean, we aren't doing this with graphing paper anymore.
Thank goodness.
Right. To find these correlations and outliers, we rely on digital tools.
Yes, absolutely.
Things like Google Trends, Tableau Public, or DataWrapper.
Those are all excellent platforms.
But I want to get into the why here. Why are these visualization tools so essential? Mm-hmm. Why can't we just look at the raw numbers in a big database?
Well, because human brains are just not biologically built to read spreadsheets.
Fair enough.
We did not evolve to process thousands of numerical values simultaneously. We evolved to spot, you know, a predator moving in the brush.
We're hunters and gatherers, basically.
Exactly. We are fundamentally visual creatures wired to detect contrast, movement, and anomalies in our physical environment.
So when I'm looking at a spreadsheet with 10,000 rows, my brain is just hitting a brick wall because there's no visual hierarchy.
Exactly. Tools like Tableau or DataWrapper, they act as translation devices.
Oh, I see.
They take abstract numerical data and translate it into shapes, colors, and spatial relationships.
That makes it so much easier.
It hijacks our evolutionary hardware. Suddenly, a massive anomaly in the data isn't just a number hidden in row 4,000. It stands out like a bright red dot on a blue background.
It stands out like a lion in the grass.
That is a brilliant way to frame it, yes. The software is just adapting the data to fit human evolutionary psychology.
Which brings us to how this actually plays out when you step away from the software and into a real-world, high-stakes environment.
Okay.
There is a fascinating case study we're exploring from the source material about a university student who used this exact framework.
Yes, and it perfectly illustrates the leap from observation to action.
So this student was preparing for their final exams, and they started to notice a pattern of declining study performance.
Which is stressful.
Super stressful. But it wasn't just a general decline. They visualized their practice test scores and noticed a very specific trend.
Let me guess, a specific day.
Yep. Their scores were dipping significantly every single Thursday.
That is the outlier. The anomaly demanding an explanation.
Right. And I think most students would just assume, oh, I'm just bad at this subject. I need to study harder and burn the midnight oil.
Which usually just leads to burnout.
Exactly. But this student applied context. They compared their Thursday scores to their weekly schedule.
Okay, now we're getting to the insight.
The insight wasn't, I'm bad at this subject. The insight was realizing they had back-to-back heavy lecture classes on Wednesdays.
Ah, so they were totally drained.
Completely. By Wednesday night, their cognitive load was just maxed out, leaving them completely exhausted and unable to retain anything during their Wednesday evening study sessions.
And that tanked their Thursday practice tests.
You can go.
They found the lurking variable.
Exactly. The solution wasn't to study more. It was to just move their core study block to Tuesday when they were actually fresh.
That is brilliant.
Right. That minor data-driven schedule shift completely reversed the trend and saved their grade before finals.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is exactly how you future-proof your career.
How so?
Well, think about a modern supply chain manager. They aren't tracking test scores, obviously. They're tracking component delivery times.
Right, millions of dollars on the line.
Yep, exactly. If they notice a specific supplier is consistently 3 days late on shipments arriving every second week of the month, they don't just yell at the assembly line to work faster.
They adjust the schedule.
They recognize the pattern, find the insight, perhaps realizing the supplier uses a different shipping route mid-month, and they pivot before the entire assembly line has to shut down.
That's a huge save.
It is. Whether you are a marketer tracking campaign engagement, a software engineer tracking server loads, or a student tracking your grades, the mechanism is identical.
You observe the trend, find the comparison, extract the insight.
And adjust your strategy before a minor anomaly becomes a major catastrophe.
Okay, but I'm going to play devil's advocate again here.
Go for it.
Because human brains are almost too good at finding patterns.
We are.
Look up at the sky, right? We see faces in the clouds. We see shapes in the stars.
Pareidolia, yeah.
Can't we just find any pattern we want if we stare at a chart long enough?
This raises an important question, and it strikes at the very heart of data analysis. Responsible use and intellectual honesty.
Okay.
Because you are absolutely right. If you want to prove a point badly enough, you can usually torture the data until it confesses to whatever you want it to say.
Torture the data?
Yeah.
It's a funny phrase, but it's actually incredibly dangerous.
It is.
You end up just deceiving yourself.
You do. Misunderstanding trends or intentionally misinterpreting them to fit a preconceived bias leads directly to flawed decision-making. We call this confirmation bias.
Where you just see what you want to see.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You only look for the data points that support what you already believe, and you conveniently ignore the outliers that contradict you.
Like someone launching a new product, seeing a tiny spike in sales on day one, and declaring it a massive success.
Yes.
While completely ignoring that, I don't know, a competitor's website was down that exact same day.
Precisely. Context is everything. Responsible data use requires rigorous, evidence-based reasoning.
It's hard work.
It is. You have to constantly ask yourself, am I seeing a real pattern, or am I just seeing what I want to see?
Right.
What evidence would actually prove me wrong?
You have to be willing to actively try to break your own hypothesis, which is exactly why the curated reading mentioned in our lesson is so vital.
Highly recommend those.
We have three specific books highlighted that are basically the holy trinity for developing this exact kind of analytical discipline.
Yes.
Factfulness, The Signal and the Noise, and Storytelling with Data.
Those texts are monumental for anyone looking to separate genuine signals from misleading noise.
Let's dig into them a bit. Starting with factfulness. One of the core concepts explored in that text is the idea of the instinct gap, and specifically the straight line instinct.
Oh, the straight line instinct is a cognitive trap we all fall into.
What is it exactly?
When we see a trend going up, like population growth or maybe a rising stock price, our brain automatically assumes that line will just continue going straight up forever.
At the exact same angle. But nature and business rarely work in straight lines.
Rarely. They work in S-curves, or they peak and plateau, or they fluctuate cyclically.
Right.
Assuming a trend will continue indefinitely without looking at the underlying constraints is just a fantastic way to make a catastrophic forecasting error.
So factfulness trains you to interrogate the shape of the trend, not just its current direction.
Exactly.
And then we have the signal and the noise, which tackles a different flavor of cognitive trap.
Yes, confusing random variance with a meaningful trend.
Right. That book dives deep into forecasting, using domains like weather prediction and baseball analytics, which is super interesting.
It is. The core lesson there is that the world is noisy. Every data set has random fluctuations.
Sure.
If you overreact to every tiny up and down movement, you are just chasing noise.
You'll drive yourself crazy.
You really will. Yeah. Finding the signal requires stepping back, kind of like your river analogy earlier, and looking for the sturdy, underlying truth beneath the daily static.
And once you've successfully avoided the straight line trap, and you've filtered out the noise to find your true signal, you still have one massive hurdle left.
Which is where storytelling with data comes in.
Yes. Because finding the insight is really only half the battle.
The other half is communicating it.
Exactly.
If you uncover a brilliant business-saving insight, but you present it to your team in a cluttered, confusing spreadsheet where nobody else can see the pattern?
Then your insight is practically useless.
It is. Nobody will act on it.
The book talks a lot about cognitive load, right? Taking away the visual clutter.
Yes, the unnecessary grid lines, the overwhelming colors.
Getting rid of all of that so that the actual insight is the only thing the viewer's brain has to process.
Exactly. It brings us right back to how our brains process visual information. You have to guide the viewer's eye directly to the anomaly or the relationship you discovered.
You aren't just presenting data. You are guiding them through the cognitive leap you already made.
Brilliantly said.
They give you the armor you need against bad data and the sword you need to cut through the noise.
I love that.
So knowing all this, the mechanisms, the tools, the cognitive traps, how do you actually start practicing? Here's where it gets really interesting, because the lesson provides a very clear tactile activity to build this habit right now.
Theory is nothing without practice, you know?
Exactly.
Pattern recognition is a muscle, and you have to flex it.
So, here is the step-by-step exercise you can try immediately after this deep dive.
Okay, let's hear it.
Pull up a single data set or a chart. You could use Google Trends and compare search interest between, say, remote work and a return to office over the last 5 years.
That's a good one.
Or pull up a demographic chart on DataWrapper. Once you have a visual in front of you, your goal is to systematically identify 4 specific things.
And being systematic is key here. Do not skip steps.
Step 1. Identify the trends. How is the information shifting over time?
Simple enough.
Step 2. Identify the comparisons. Where do the lines cross? Where do they diverge from each other?
Yeah.
Step 3. List the possible causes for what you're seeing. What is the context? And step 4, and this is the absolute crucial part, narrow all of your observations down to exactly 1 useful insight.
Restricting yourself to exactly 1 insight is a phenomenal constraint.
It really is.
It forces prioritization. When people first start analyzing data, they tend to just list 20 different observations and call them insights.
There's a laundry list of facts.
Exactly. Forcing yourself to pick just 1 makes you evaluate which piece of information actually demands real-world action.
It forces you to ask, if I could only make 1 decision based on this chart, what would it be?
Yes.
And to help guide you through this activity, you can integrate the knowledge check questions from the lesson as your mental checklist.
Oh, that's smart.
As you look at the chart, ask yourself, what is the trend here? Then ask, why is this comparison useful? And finally, ask, what's the actual insight?
If you do that consistently with the charts and graphs you encounter every day, it becomes second nature.
You just start doing it automatically.
You do. You stop seeing isolated numbers, and you start seeing the underlying mechanics of the world around you.
So what does this all mean? If we wrap this entire discussion together, it comes down to a few undeniable truths.
Let's hear them.
Trends give us the trajectory of change. Comparisons give us the depth and context we need to understand that change. And insights, that cognitive leap we kept talking about, connect our data to tangible real-world action. Ultimately, pattern recognition isn't just about reading spreadsheets or navigating software. It is your ultimate tool for anticipating the future and making better decisions in life and work.
I completely agree. And I will leave you with this lesson's core reflection prompt to mull over as you go about your day.
What is it?
Ask yourself, how can recognizing patterns and trends help me make better decisions?
It's a question that applies to everything from optimizing your weekly schedule, like our student did, to leading a team through a digital transformation.
Truly everything.
We want to encourage you to stay curious, be responsible with how you interpret information, and keep building the skills that will make you future ready.
Absolutely. The future belongs to those who can see the signal through the noise.
Please be sure to review the end of module study guide and complete the workbook activities to really lock these concepts in. And before we go, we want to acknowledge our reference materials today, specifically the concepts explored in the books Factfulness, The Signal and the Noise, and Storytelling with Data. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive, and we'll catch you next time.